So, well, I actually do prefer the expected depending on the circumstances. The only reason being is because oftentimes it's a great feeling to know, to be able to predict something that's going to happen in your life. I kind of feel like sometimes when something can be quite unexpected, yes, there are a lot of good things that come from it, and that's great. But oftentimes when there's a lot of bad things that come from it, one person can feel like, I don't know what to do with myself.
All right, I got a chance to catch up with a wonderful guy named Kevin, who doesn't have much time. Kevin, do you prefer the expected or the unexpected?
I think it's situation-driven, right? I think it depends on what the setup is.
Okay, but if you had to choose one?
As a person, expected.
All right, so do you prefer the expected or the unexpected?
Unexpected.
Why?
Because being in a comfort zone is always too comfortable. So I like to push myself, push boundaries, so I get different experiences and stuff like that.
How do you react when events in your life happen unexpectedly? If you had to choose a life where you could live without ever experiencing the unexpected, or a life where you would always have the expected, which one would you choose? A life with no surprises or a life full of surprises? A life where you could predict traumatic events or a life where traumatic events came out of nowhere? Hi, I'm Timothy Mauricio, a behavioral psychology author and researcher, and my mission is to simplify neuroscience and behavioral psychology for you to apply the insights to your personal and professional journeys. Understanding how your brain reacts to the unexpected could help you prepare and position you for what happens afterwards. And that's why in this episode, I'm bringing you Professor Sonja Hoffer, a German neuroscientist who studies our brain's neural circuitry. Basically, she studies the stuff inside our brains so that we can understand how we make decisions and how our brains create what we see and how we experience the world. We discuss her groundbreaking research on how the brain processes the unexpected. Meet neuroscientist Sonja Hoffer. Enjoy. My interest in this research is watching how people close to me and leadership teams come undone, become overwhelmed with anxiety in the presence of the unexpected. So I can't wait to dive into this conversation with Professor Sonja Hoffer. Sonja, welcome. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much. And I absolutely love these global conversations. Are you based in London?
Yes, exactly.
Well, before we get into this wonderful paper that you guys have written, which is called the Cooperative Thalamocortical Circuit Mechanism for Sensory Prediction Errors.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful.
Basically, guys, hang in there. You know, we're going to really simplify this neuroscience and really look at how your unexpected brain, what we call, I'm going to call in this episode, the unexpected brain, is implicated in this technical research. But before we do that, we're going to go inside your mind, Sonja. Can we do that?
Yeah, that's a bit scary, but go on.
All right, here we go. So I'm going to ask you 7 questions, either or type of questions, and you can only choose one. Here we go. Number one, rain or snow?
Oh, snow. That is so easy.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm a skier. I love skiing and mountains.
Oh, I see. So you're not like dancing in the rain?
No. Well, sometimes in London you have to, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Picnic or romantic dinner?
Ooh, that's harder. Romantic dinner.
Okay. Number 3, writing with a pen or typing?
Typing. My handwriting is so bad. I know it's nicer to write a letter, and I would love to get letters occasionally.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So much harder.
Number 4, speaking or listening?
Listening, yeah.
Nice. Well, you're going to have to do some speaking on this episode.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's an introvert. I need to really push myself.
No problem. You're in a safe space here. Number 5, tea with honey or plain?
Oh, plain.
Without honey. Plain. Okay. Number six, fiction or nonfiction?
Oh, that's good. Fiction.
Okay. And finally, number seven, the predictable or the unpredictable?
Right. Really hard, because I know, I mean, as most of us, I feel comfortable when I can predict everything. I mean, we're going to talk about exactly that, right? But yes, then if something is unexpected, it's also exciting. It's new experiences. So no, there I can't decide. But
no, you have to. I've never let anybody off the hook on this. Oh, sorry.
Bit of both.
Choose. Thank you.
No, unexpected and unpredictable.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for allowing us to go inside your mind. I really, really appreciate you making time. Let's just acknowledge the other researchers on this paper quickly. Who was on your team?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the leading researcher who basically did all the work and is absolutely amazing is Shohei Furutashi. He's a senior postdoctoral researcher in my lab who's now actually starting to look for his own position in his own lab. And
nice.
He did many years of painstaking work. It was really heroic. So, I mean, everything here comes from him. So
nice. Let's talk a little bit about your lab as well. Tell us about the work you guys are doing in the lab and what your priorities are at the lab.
Yeah, so we are a neuroscience lab in London who really focuses on detailed neural circuit mechanisms of the brain and how they underlie our perceptions and behavior. So really looking deep in detail into the brain at the specific cells, the neurons, how they interact, the different pathways, and how different circuits and cell types work together to give us our different amazing brain functions.
Nice. I just, you know, for anyone new who came here just for the vibes, and this sounds a little bit technical, just stay patient. I will say this. The other day, I listened to an interview with Richard Dawkins about, you know, how an animal's experience with the environment signals to the genes this kind of internal shift in the biology that will produce a shift in the exterior. So when a lizard in a desert has the top of a lizard has, for example, an image on it that mimics for camouflage purposes, the desert. So on top of the lizard, there's an image of a desert so that they can hide and protect themselves. He talked about all of the neural biological stuff that happened inside of the lizard first before it actually showed up in its skin as camouflage. And I was really blown away by that, because sometimes we forget that what's happened in our brain is ultimately driving our behavior and what shows up on our face. So for example, one of the things I'm interested in is that when you see an angry lion or an angry human, the scowl and the look on their face is very, very similar. And if we were to look in a lion's brain and we were looking at a human's brain, am I right to say that the similar circuits and similar neural pathways, similar chemicals are flowing that creates that angry look in a human and the angry look in a lion?
Yeah, I would absolutely say so. I mean, I'm not sure about the look and how angry lions can look, but the feeling of anger and aggression, yeah, absolutely. Many of the same brain regions will be activated or will be similar things. So
So, I mean, and I think that's important as we go into this conversation, guys. And as you follow this conversation, just remember that every expression that you have is underpinned by some sort of neural pathway, some sort of chemical responses, some sort of hormonal displays. There's a cocktail of stuff happening in your brain that dictates how you're responding. And that's what Sonia is studying, the underlying dynamics in this. So I want to just make sure anybody who searches this paper that was published in Nature, Let's look at the title. So the cooperative thalamocortical circuit, what is that? Let's just break that down. What part of the brain is that in?
Yeah, so I think most people hopefully will know about the cerebral cortex. That's the big thing on top of our brain that has all these folds, and that basically is the part that's become so much bigger in humans and underlies all these amazing abilities that we have to think, to perceive our world, to plan, and so on. So we've observed the signals that we're going to talk about in the visual part of this cerebral cortex, the visual cortex that is at the back of our brain. And it's the first instance, the first area in the cerebral cortex that receives these signals from our eyes. So the visual signal about the world around us.
Okay, and, got it. Yeah.
And then the second part, this is the thalamus. And then there's another brain area that sits, another brain region that sits below the cerebral cortex. And that is basically something like the entry point into the cortex. So almost all signals that come from our sense organs, from other places in the brain, need to go through the thalamus to reach the cerebral cortex. So it's almost like gatekeeper that can kind of get all information from the rest of the brain and send it to the cortex. And we found that these interactions between the thalamus and the cortex are very important to produce these kind of surprise signals when something unexpected happens.
I see. Okay. So when someone is surprised, they're caught off guard, completely surprised, something unexpected happens, the brain responds in particular ways. So you guys speak about the amplification of neurons in your work. And so I want to make it super clear that there are two sides of this dynamic. And part of the reason why I'm interested in having this conversation with you, Sonia, is that sometimes the unexpected brings us so much joy. It is like a comedian thrives off the unexpected. A comedian throws at you things that you would not expect someone to say. And if it's done well, you will fall on the floor laughing. And then there are times where the predictable nature of a relationship gives your brain so much comfort, and you need and you rely on that level of comfort. Even in the markets, if the markets are constantly reacting in an unpredictable way, you can't have a stable society. So on the one side, you need the stability, you need the expected. On the other side, we thrive off of the unexpected to bring us joy, as we were saying in the inside of the mind feature. So why was it interesting to you guys to study this? Like, which side of the unexpected were you most interested in?
It's actually very well phrased, Timothy, these two different aspects of something that is expected or unexpected. One reason why we started studying this is that we know that unexpected events or stimuli have a very strong effect on our brain and on many different brain regions inside our brain. We get kind of activity or kind of is many different areas of the brain are activated by different unexpected types of events. So it's something that our brain is very good at detecting, and that basically can lead our attention to these events, right? So when we see something that we don't expect, we'll pay particularly attention to, as we all know. Also, we know that these signals are very important for learning, because we have expectations about the world, about what we expect to see, what we expect will happen. And if something unexpected happens, that helps us to learn, to update our predictions and the models that we have in our brain about how the world around us works.
So Sonia, let me, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I want to say to people who are creative and different, if you are in an environment where you have purple hair and everyone else has black or blonde hair, this is why people stare at you, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It immediately obviously draws attention, right? It's something like, different.
Yeah, your brain is hyper wired. To be able to detect that purple.
Yes, absolutely. And okay. I mean, and you
I just wanted
about,
to highlight that.
And you talked about how unexpected events, things can make us very happy and comfortable, right? I mean, as long as they're in our comfort zone. So, as you said, jokes, basically, almost every joke plays with something unexpected happens at the end, right? And it is
Yes.
such a strong signal that is activating so many circuits in the brain that it makes it light up,
Explosive.
basically.
Yes.
And
Yes,
as long
yes,
as it's
yes.
in small doses and it's in our comfort zone, then we really enjoy it, right? Also, it's known that dopamine signaling is involved in this, so that we know it has also sometimes to do with pleasure or positive reinforcement. So it can be something extremely positive, but then in other circumstances, or especially if it gets too much, if there's too much uncertainty, then it can be incredibly stressful, right? Because it needs much more brain power if we're in situations that we can't, where we can't make predictions, where we don't know what's happening. We need to engage so much more of our brain that it can become very stressful and for some people very uncomfortable.
Yeah. When you guys set out to research this, were you surprised at the findings at all, or was it part of what you were thinking going in?
So some parts were expected. So we were finding that there's this strong signal even in this early part of the brain that processes the visual information. And we found strong signals when there's a novel or unexpected something that. So we do our research in animals and mice. And when mice see something they don't expect, we get these strong signals, like a lot of neurons start being active in the visual cortex. And this was kind of seen before, and we had expected that, even though it was still surprising how strong these signals were. What was unexpected is that there's all these hypotheses in the field that says, how do these signals, which are called prediction errors, what information they should actually carry? What do they tell the rest of the brain about
Okay,
this
let's just
event?
unpack, because I also found the prediction errors was a highlight of this paper for me in particular. So it's sort of adding something to my lexicon. A prediction error would be, give me an example for the ordinary person out here.
Yeah, so it's a signal in the brain when something is unexpected. And that can be I'm walking down the street and there's usually I see different shops next to me, and all of a sudden one shop is gone. And instead I see a pink elephant, for example, right? Then you would see this prediction error signal. Or if I expect something to happen, like I bite into a cake, normally it's sweet and I would get this nice reward signal, but maybe someone has used too much salt and it tastes disgusting, then I would get a
Got it.
negative prediction error. And so
Got
you
it.
get all these kinds, just signal if something happens that I haven't expected. And these are
Okay.
called by neurosciences prediction error signals.
Got it. Got it. Awesome. And would you say at the core of one of the things that makes animals animals is the ability to predict? If you really think about intelligence, whether it is a cheetah in the bush who stalks up on an antelope or a deer if you're in the US, etc., and sees that if I can predict the distance I'll eat, or if you are single and you can swipe right or left and predict with some level of accuracy, maybe you'll get married. Like our ability for the brain to be able to predict the expected, is this one of the things that makes us most human, or is it just basic animalistic instincts?
No, I would say it's one of the big fundamental things about, well, both being human and all mammals can do it to some degree, but humans are particularly good at it. And just our brains of mammals is basically one big, what we call a prediction machine. So
Yes.
from when we are little and we learn about the world, what we do constantly is make so-called kind of internal models of the world to learn how the world works. If I do that, what happens? Kind of if I do an action, what are the consequences? What do I expect to happen next? So we do this all the time, and a lot of our development is developing these models about how the world works. And that allows us really to function normally, right? So I would say that that is a big thing about being humans, but also other animals and even little mice have this ability to some degree. Obviously not as sophisticated,
but
the basics are the same.
You know, one of the things that I've been completely fascinated by is the evolvement, the growth and the maturity of the prefrontal cortex region. You know, there's been a lot of studies, particularly because of the gender moment we are facing in history, that until the prefrontal region fully matures, that we shouldn't be allowing children to make certain decisions. I think it's a huge part of why you only drive at a certain age, you only vote at a certain age. That ability to be able to predict to help advance our civilization is very, very important, right? Is prediction in that part of the brain, do they correlate very strongly? Or one of the things that I found interesting in your paper is that there are many regions of the brain involved in navigating the unexpected. Is it one part of the brain, the prefrontal region, or is it the like an accumulation, or is it dynamic across the brain?
Yeah, it's very much dynamic across the brain. I think the prefrontal cortex is essential for many things, and it's something like an orchestrator and very important for kind of higher cognitive functions, making us plan, think, and so on. But these signals, I mean, that's one of the surprising things, is that we observe them in many, many places in the brain. And they might be computed even kind of low down in the hierarchy and not just on this kind of high level of prefrontal cortex. So it's something that we, in general in neuroscience, more and more recognize and appreciate now, that a lot of things are not just in one brain region, but quite distributed and
got it.
Very complex circuits. So things are, as usual, the closer you look, the more complex it gets. And the same is true for our amazing brains.
Now, this part coming up is where the true fans of neuroscience and the fans of this podcast will continue, and the others are going to log off. So let's talk about the technology that you use, the 2-photon calcium imaging. What on earth is that, you know, when it comes to studying mice's brains?
Yeah, so this is one of the amazing technologies that we have these days in neuroscience that really allow us to kind of look deep into the brain and at individual neurons and many neurons at the cell types in our brain, and kind of follow how they talk to each other, when are they active, when are they not active, and we can even identify individual cells and what cells they are. And so it's a microscopy that uses imaging of fluorescence, and
fluorescence.
Very strong laser that can shine deep into the brain and visualize these different networks of neurons and how they talk to each other.
Sure. Are we allowed to use them on humans yet, or only on animals?
No, I mean, it can't shine that deep into the brain. So yeah, it's most useful in small animals, and we need access to the brain. So we need to kind of remove the skull, and then we can look inside. So one can think about it as some type of, like in humans, we use fMRI for imaging, right?
And, yes.
This microscopy is something like fMRI, but on a single cell level and on a smaller area. So we can zoom in much more and really look at the specific circuits, rather than just knowing, oh, a region in the brain is active when I do something or something happens.
The prefrontal region evolves, and I think it matures around somewhere between 23 and 25 years old, right?
Yeah, and I think there's changes even later on. So
there
yeah,
even
it definitely
later
matures.
On?
It matures much, much later than other regions of the brain.
And why does that matter if you are a leader? Let's say you are, and I know this is not necessarily your area of focus, so just let's just kind of talk through this together. If you are, you know, a 50, 60-year-old leader, and you're working with a group of fresh out of college, 23, 24-year-olds, is there an implication to their ability to predict, their ability to be stronger at certain things versus other things? Any insight there based on how the brain works?
Yeah, so I'm as you said, I'm really not an expert in prefrontal cortex, and especially in humans. But I would say at that age, things are mature enough that I don't think there's any problem with kind of cognitive abilities. If
Got it.
anything, I mean, it's definitely the younger you go, the more you will maybe get different viewpoints. You'll get, I think it can also be advantages, right? Advantages that you have, you can view things from different angles, right? From someone who's maybe still in a different stage of development.
Got
I
it.
mean, that the crucial difference is really during teenage years, during adolescence, where it seems that the circuits are almost kind of more mature before, and then they get scrambled up again for a reason we're still quite not quite sure about. And
Oh, wait,
then
so
only
if
later
you
it
are
quiets down again.
okay, so if you are a so if you are a parent of a teenager, your teen goes through this highly complex phase where the neural circuitry is just kind of like bungled up a little bit. Can you explain that a little bit? Just kind of unpack that quickly.
Yeah, so it seems that a lot of kind of connections between the brain cells are lost and new ones are formed, and a lot happens during this time in adolescence. So what I would say is just to all parents to give your kids some slack, and kind of they're dealing with a lot in their brains. It's a very
Let, let
can
them
be a
kind of
very
figure it out.
confusing time. And
Yeah.
so somewhere if they're acting strange, it's absolutely to be expected.
Okay. All right. So I did want to talk on what you guys found around autism and schizophrenia. I'll give you a moment to just share some of your findings there.
So in our research, it was all what we call so-called fundamental research. So we did not look at disease models, but we looked at how things work in the healthy brain. But
Okay.
it can give us quite some information when also about how we think about schizophrenia and autism, because both are weirdly, even though they seem to be at the opposite side of the spectrum, there are some credible theories that say that kind of this prediction error signaling and the predictive systems of the brain might be compromised in both of them in different ways.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So in
Yeah, so
autism, yeah, so and that might cause many of the symptoms that we see in these diseases.
Got it. And that's part of the reason why you want to tackle this in your lab, so you can advance this work to other researchers and we can continue to build and learn. Maybe there's someone who's studying unhealthy brains and they can kind of build from this research, right?
Exactly. So we both first need to understand how things work in a healthy brain to then understand what goes wrong, right, when in some of these disorders and diseases. And so this gives us a very
Awesome.
Good basis to understand this. And we can now compare, okay, what about, so in mice, we can look at there are different actually mice models for autism where that we're actually interested to do in the future to see, do we see the same things or do we see different differences in these prediction error signals and then the predictions that mice make and the signals in the
Wow.
brain. And then we
Well,
hopefully, I mean, we hope to also extend this then for other research groups to humans
sure.
to give them
Sure.
the information to look in subjects.
Yeah. Thank you, Sonia. I really appreciate the rigor and you guys tackling this because I do think on some level we are evolving as humans and there's so much unexpected that's starting to happen that are shaking us at our core, the entire world. I actually think, you know, and we won't get into this, but maybe in a future episode, I'll look at this, that part of our challenge of dealing with things like inclusion is that there's so much unexpected when you're dealing with people who look differently, who come from different backgrounds, different age groups, different genders, et cetera, that we freak out and we paralyze. We feel a level of paralysis when dealing with inclusion. We really struggle to engage people who look differently. I think this is part of it, but you know, I'll let people take from once they read this paper themselves and try to infer and try to go down a journey, because I love papers like this because then it inspires you to study so much more, to keep going and going a little bit deeper. I allow you to have the final word. Like, you know, what would you like people to be thinking who are not necessarily in the science community, who are just kind of ordinary people thinking about navigating the unexpected and the expected. Any kind of final thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, many different thoughts, especially about, you know, this goes obviously way beyond our study, and it's not exactly what we're studying, but it's exactly like you said, right? This uncertainty is something that we don't deal well with, and unexpected events if they become too many. And that's actually sometimes that something that humans and all mammals are striving to do is decrease uncertainty. And it kind of actively we strive towards making things predicted and finding patterns and so on. And if that's not possible, if there's too much uncertainty, that is can be incredibly stressful. And if that is chronic, it can lead to disorders like depression or anxiety and so on. So yeah. And that is a big problem nowadays, because uncertainties in many different directions are becoming kind of larger and larger, especially for young people today.
Yeah.
So we need to just appreciate this, how much harder these young people have it than maybe at least in the Western world we did 40 years ago, where everything was very stable. And also to what you said about, that's why inclusion is sometimes difficult, because our brain just alerts us so much to anything that is different that we're not expecting, right? So there is this intrinsic strong reaction to it, right? But that's why we have our prefrontal cortex that you seem to love so much, yes. Timothy. That's why what makes us human, that we can control our lizard brain and we can work on that. And that's, I think, so there's no excuse. I think when people say, oh, yeah, that's just how our brains are, they react to this in a negative way if we see something that's not just quite fitting in. That's exactly what made us humans, that we can control these things and we can work on inhibiting these maybe negative thoughts. And I have all hope that humanity can go in a good direction there if we just remember
I hope
that.
So. Otherwise, AI will take over. And right? I mean, at the end of the day, that our ability to be able to navigate between our most primitive and our highest cognitive self is what makes the magic, I think. I think
Absolutely.
That, right? At the end of the day, a wild animal is largely driven by the most primitive instincts, and we have the ability to be able to have those. I mean, that's one of the things I love about the imagination. Is that imagination allows you to go into spaces that scare you, that are unexpected, that are dangerous, and you can come back to your safe zone.
Exactly. And I would say that this is something we should all do, right? Yes, we strive to have everything predictable around us and stay in our safe zone, but it's important also for our mental health to sometimes go out and expose ourselves and do things that are different and meet people that seem different, right? Just to give our brain this ability to expand and keep us happy.
Yeah, it's beautifully said. Thank you so much. And I will tell anybody who wants to take this, and if you want to supercharge your immune system, supercharge your brain to be able to be more calm in the unexpected when you're dealing in a leadership environment, allow that to be one of the big takeaways. You know, I'm big on nature and I'm big on proactively engaging your full capacity. And so I share papers like this and researches like this because I want you to understand the depths. And thank you so much for getting through this conversation with you. And I thank you again. And thank your entire team, Sonia. We really, really appreciate it.
Well, it was a huge pleasure. Thanks so much for the interest.